Hi everyone, this is Austin, welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage the LL office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody with us and ready to go?
I am.
We sure are. Just want to say a little word about gatherings before we get into it, but we might maybe take this caller before we do that, eh?
Yeah, sounds good. Looks like we have a caller wanting to ask a question from area code 229. So, caller from 229 on the air. Who are we talking to?
Thanks for taking my call. My name is Melvin from Georgia.
Hello, Melvin from Georgia.
I was just calling to see what you are doing some intuitive readings today.
Unfortunately not. This show is more geared towards just addressing spiritually oriented questions from a more human perspective. We don't really do intuitive readings on this show.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
Alrighty. Do we want to talk a little bit about the upcoming workshops we've got going on?
I would, yes.
Alright.
Please go right ahead.
Well, the first one we have going on is the Art of Healing Circle Retreat. It is run by our good friend Beatriz Gonzalez, who's been an intuitive healer for 30 years now. She has discovered the Law of One and integrated the Law of One into her healing technique, which recognizes the emotional roots of any physical ailments. So she's taken all of her experience in healing physical ailments and started gearing them towards healing emotional ailments that cause the physical problem. So during this workshop, she will be sharing the information that she's discovered and also walk the whole group through her miracle of self-healing exercise. So it is both an informative and transformative weekend. That will be March 21st through the 23rd here in Louisville at the Courtyard Louisville East. And then the other workshop we have going on is an archetypes workshop dedicated to exploring the archetypes, as Ra discusses in Book 4 of The Law of One. That is April 11th through the 13th. It will be held at our good friend's farm property in Perryville, Kentucky. And it will be a discussion led by our friend Safira Vox, who is a career philosopher. He has spent the past few years studying the archetypes as discussed in the Law of One, hoping to present them in a more intelligible way for people to understand. And that should be a great conversation. We're looking forward to both of these workshops a whole lot.
And don't forget, in one you get hotel food, and the other you get farm food. I mean, who could ask for anything more? Not to mention Gary's bonfire at the farm.
Right, yeah, the Archetypes workshop has for a bonfire, which we're all really excited about, but probably Gary more than anybody.
That was a deal breaker for me.
Alrighty, let's go ahead and jump into our opening riff. Today's quote comes from a Kuo session from November 19th, 1986. The most basic tool for the achievement of a realization of a life lived in magic is meditation, for meditation introduces you to yourself. You may not like what you see. You may discover many, many, many thoughts, thoughts that do not stop, thoughts that do not seem important, thoughts that you do not control. You may find yourself ill-suited at first to meditation from a physical viewpoint, the body being perhaps not used to sitting properly, still without falling asleep. And yet, if all you discover about yourself over and over is, as far as you know, that you are dissatisfied with your meditations, nevertheless, the intent that sits you in a chair or on the floor or on the ground and puts you in the kingdom of silence is fulfilling completely its part in your development as a magical personality. For it is not only intent, but intent carried through with even and steadfast perseverance that creates personal power.
Thank you, Austin. Sometimes I feel like a 10-year-old pulling around a little red wagon, and the red wagon is full of these little brochures that say, meditate, 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 meditate. And you think to yourself, is Carla ever going to get off this subject? Is Carla ever going to talk about something besides meditating? I come back to it, guys, over and over again, just the way I come back to meditation over and over again, because it is the key to the kingdom of how many of us have been silent today. If you're in the city, you're full of sounds, the sounds of, I remember I went to school for a year at the McDuffie School for Girls, and it was on a, at the time, it's moved now, but it, at the time, my dorm was on a brick hill, and you know how loud brick hills are, even for the lightest of cars, that run the way down. Okay, so at the bottom of this fairly steep, fairly long brick hill, there was a traffic light. And it was leading onto a very large, very much used commercial route. And truck after truck would be coming down this hill. And then, of course, you know, you'd put the brakes on, and the brakes are loud. And they come. Well, once I got used to that, I never heard it. It didn't bother me at all. Until I came home for Christmas, couldn't sleep because of the lack of sound. I was so used to that noise that I didn't feel safe in an atmosphere that had so little going for it. And my house was only a half a block, a fairly long block, I'll give you that, from a train that, you know, came by, wee, 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 you know, that wonderful lonely sound of the train that always appealed to me so much. But it wasn't as noisy as the trucks, nor as often. I now live out far enough in the country that, except for the train, this is exactly the same track, actually, that I lived a half a block off of when I was a kid. Now I live about a block and a half off of it, so it's not as loud, but it's loud enough. You know, it's not the suburbs, it's the exurbs. But where's the silence? you can go out into the middle of nowhere and you're still not dealing with silence. You're dealing with the noises of nature. There are rustles in the brush, and there are bird calls morning and night. I love the owls most of all, I think, at night. They're not pretty, but they're unique. There's never any really complete silence until you invoke it. And you say to yourself, okay, no iTunes, no iPod, no computer games, no TV, no radio. Put it all down. Turn it all off. If you like, close your eyes. And go into the kingdom. In my life, found an end to the depth of it. I am hungry for it. I yearn for it. And I'm lousy at it. Again and again, I try to dive into the deep end, only to discover that, bonk, 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 I've hit the baby steps. I'm thinking about the menus for the week, or what color to paint my nails to express my personality that week, or what to say to a friend who's lost a mom, or, oh, so many things to fill the mind with good things and silly things, disheveled, muddy things that you wonder, why are they there? Why did I think of that? But you persevere. Can you feel the energy just in those few seconds between us? Just because there are a certain number of people listening to the show, and the four of us are in the house working on the show, and we've stopped talking, and they're all listening to me, waiting for me to say the next thing, a moment of real silence. And it has texture and rhythm and mood. It's easier to meditate with a group. Each person helps the other. For one thing, each person calls the other person to remember the date. Okay, it's time to meditate. So maybe you take a walk together. Maybe you just hold hands. Look into each other's eyes. Maybe you don't do anything but just sit there. But however you want to do it, you've promised each other these moments. And so you gather in this. And for however long you've agreed to do this, you keep trying. One of the hardest things in the world is to get somebody who also wants to meditate to agree with you, to set aside a time to meditate with you. It's not that it's scary so much as that there are just so many things to do. Well, I've got this and I've got that, and I'm supposed to, when am I going to find the time to meditate? And to agree to do it, not just today, but once a week or twice a week or whatever. And why should I really? I mean, I'm trying to meditate all the time. Sort of a walking meditation, a waking meditation, sort of praying a little bit before, remembering that the person on the other end of the line is the Creator before I pick up the telephone, before I say hello. Remember, oh, that's the Creator you're talking to. When you remember that that person is the Creator, even if all you're doing is ordering a couple of hospital gowns, which I did earlier today, and on the other end feels the difference of the quality of your voice. He is puzzled. He doesn't really understand that quality. Why is that quality of admiration and honesty in that person's voice? Why does that person honor you, feeling wonderful, blessed? Nothing needs to be said. It doesn't have to be acknowledged. It just feels good. And there you go. What's that? And you pull out my little brochure that says meditate. Go, right, Carla wants you to meditate. Okay. Today I'm going to try. And you do. And that could be the beginning of a wonderful friendship.
Moving on to our questions. Our first question this week comes from JP from Utah, who sent it in through email. JP says, I'm very curious and maybe doing a lot of wishful thinking, but who cannot wonder about fourth density? Will we have parents? Will they guide us and nurture us? Will they take care of us? Where do the resources come from? Who picks the crops? Who cooks the food? Who supplies the water? Or will we be thought made or test tube? So many things to think. I thought this was a great question for us to sort of have fun with, use our imaginations a bit, use some speculation to help get have a little bit of fun with it, because we really, there's no way to know what fourth density is going to be like, because, you know, we're in third density and we've got this veil. Some of us may have experienced it before, but we can't remember. So we can only speculate and imagine, and I thought that might be a little fun.
Okay, who wants to go first?
I vote Gary.
So JP had some specific ways that he wanted to probe what fourth density would be like. He said parents. So I saw a documentary called The Matrix, starring Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne,
mm-hmm.
and that describes this. So from my understanding of this documentary, it's not so much a system of parenting per se, but it seems rather that there are these vast fields of pods that contain amniotic fluid, and each person is inside this pod, and they're connected via wires, and you just have to see the movie to kind of understand.
Yeah, it's
that.
A wonderful movie.
Will they guide and nurture us, take care of us, JP asked about parents. And if wanderers are any indication, then the answer is an emphatic no. If the parents of higher densities were so guiding and supportive and caring, would they have said, you want to go, or they would have said, you want to go to what planet? You can't be serious. Oh, you are serious. No, you can't go to Earth. Now go to your thought form room and stay there. And then would have counseled their children on all the bad things that happen on this planet, and their children wouldn't have come. So the fact that there are wanderers here on Earth is testament to very bad cosmic parenting, in my opinion. JP asks, who picks the crops? Unicorns. Who cooks the food? Unicorns. Who supplies the water? You may be familiar with John 2:1-11, or John 2:1-11. If not, this is every party host's favorite moment in biblical history. Jesus turns water into wine. What did Ra say of Jesus? That Jesus was a fourth density wanderer. So where do you think Jesus learned this party trick? That's right, fourth density. So That should answer your question there. And JP says, will we be made or will we be made out of a test tube? And refer to my previous answer about the documentary The Matrix on that one.
That was very insightful, Gary.
All right, thank you.
Just a little bit out of the raw material. Some of this might contradict a little bit of what Gary said, but
you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. His source seems pretty reliable.
I have data, but go ahead.
As far as parenting goes, Ross says that physical evolution continues to hold sway in fourth density. So I would assume that we would have parents. Because that's sort of how physical evolution works, is parents pass on their genetic material to their children. So I'm assuming that we have parents. Who knows whether fourth density children are sort of like third density children, where they're naive, really don't know how to approach the world. Third density parents have to really guide their children so they don't run off and get hurt. In other sorts of channeling, I've heard accounts of children being just as naive, but since it's a fourth density world, they can pretty much let their children go anywhere, and they don't have to worry about it. Their children can disappear for days at a time, and they don't worry because they know that wherever their children are, they're being taken care of by people who view them as their own child, and that they really don't have to worry about any bad people picking up their child. They don't have to worry about their child experiencing anything that the child cannot use as a learning experience already. As far as who picks the crops, I think that maybe the social memory complex, sort of the way the mind works, delegates the different things that the society needs to certain groups of people. And so when you incarnate, you sort of realize that this is my role within the social memory complex. And I will approach it as a service to the Creator, as everybody else approaches their role as a service to the Creator, because it is essential to the functioning of the social memory complex to go on and serve. So Ross says we do still eat food, says that the communion between the living foodstuff and the preparer is a lot more than in third density. And that fourth density beings are really impatient, and they don't really want to take the time to stop serving others to eat food for themselves. So it's a big catalyst in fourth density to find the patience to nourish their own bodies. And that's all I can get from the raw material. There's probably a lot we can really just imagine and speculate on, extrapolating from that. Jim and Carla, do you, either of you have any thing you could imagine fourth density being like?
I was at one time hypnotized by Don Elkins and took me back to a higher density and to the life that we lived there. And I lived in a certain sort of clan. And it seemed that the people lived in clans depending on what it was that they wanted to do. At some point, very early on in life, you knew what you wanted to do, and you went to live in this clan. And the reason that you knew early on in life was because of the life with everything open to you. You knew who you were. You knew why you had made the agreement with your parents to be with them. You knew what it was that you wanted to do to serve. It was these were choices that had been made before you were born. You were fairly certain as to what it was you wanted to do because thing was open to you. And there was as much joy in being a farmer or taking care of the water or doing tech stuff that was necessary for the good of the society as a whole, as there was in being born into a clan, which lived in the temple and studied spiritual matters. And we were so happy there. It was incredible how happy we were. It was a place that people were welcome to visit and did so regularly. Came in on what looked to us like spaceships and landed on these little pods and spent maybe an afternoon sharing the group's activities and then went home. And they were welcome and they were to stay as long as they wanted, and some stayed a little bit longer, but part of it was a day trip. And for the most part, it was a very quiet life. We loved our studies, and we were just so hungry for more. It was something that we couldn't wait to get back to. It was a happy life, and grew more and more into your maturity. You more and more became aware of what it was your service was going to be for that life, what your outer service was going to be. And maybe it wasn't going to be on that planet. I mean, a lot of people in our clan, as I recall from being hypnotized, stayed in a state of meditation for most of the time. And their job was simply to do that, to hold that space of meditation and simply radiate love throughout the universe. Just let it flow. And they did this in groups. And it was a joy to do that. It wasn't what I wanted to do, obviously. I was an adventurer. I thought it would be fun to come here and help people. And I was going, come on, guys, this is going to be fun, you know, it's a challenge, but look at the good that we can do and the difference that we can make. And look how unhappy these people are and how hungry they are for love. They need love so much. And once we wake up, I'm sure we'll remember. We're bound to remember. And we're going to wake up and we're going to be serving by holding the light for these people on this planet and bringing the whole planet slowly upwards so that they can graduate into the next realm, a realm that is metaphysical instead of physical. This is the last physical realm. After this, according to my, you know, questionable hypnotic state, this was the last physical realm. After this physical realm, then fourth density and upwards became metaphysical. But the fourth density was enough like third density that you still had people in families that had children. And unlike Gary's imagination, loved them dearly. And if they wanted to go off and launch themselves into a difficult and challenging job for that particular incarnation, then more power to them. And, you know, they'd give them a little token to take with them. Maybe it would be a little place on their body that was like a little something that would help people remember, oh yeah, I'm supposed to wake up, I'm supposed to be aware of who I am and why I came here and why in the world I went to this place in the first place, because this is hard. This is really hard. But I came here for a good reason, and I really want to throw myself into it, and I want to do a good job. Because an incarnation is gone in the blink of an eye. It won't be long before we're back with our clan talking about this, how incredible it all was. we want to do the best we can. We need to get going. I dreamed about this temple, or, you know, I had hypnosis about this temple. And could describe it to a certain extent. So we kept all this information secret, and we hypnotized two friends of mine, Elizabeth and Sally. They were my two best friends in this incarnation. Thought it might be worthwhile to hypnotize them since we were so close. And so they agreed to it, and they were both good hypnotic subjects, probably better than I. Well, they both independently described the same temple, the same life, the same trembling moment of anticipation as we were standing there getting ready to go to Earth. Oh, it was an exciting time. All of us together just holding hands and getting ourselves set for this job that we were going to do and launching ourselves into third density, where we would incarnate as third density people, wake up in this fog of forgetting, this veil of forgetting, and hope that we could somehow remember. I don't know why I was given the gift so soon, but I remembered almost as soon as, well, I think I knew for sure before I was born, and certainly immediately afterwards, that I was here to serve. And I wanted to serve so much. And it was almost embarrassing how intense I was about this, wanting to serve. And I'm still like that. I'm far too intense. I cry too easily. I'm just so into it. And people are like, Ruck, slow down. Take it easy. Take it off, okay? I'm going, oh, but I want to do this so much. Well, thank God that I remembered, because Sally remembered. Beth remembered. It was the same place, but we were all arts and sciences types. You know, we were describing, oh, it was lovely, and the clouds, and it looked like this, and blah. Well, we couldn't really describe it any other way because we didn't have the science to do so. But years later, we were going to write a book, okay, whom can we hypnotize that would add to this? And that might have the capacity to have been in the same group. And naturally, we thought of Morris, who is our vice president and who has been with us since long before the beginning of the official L&L research, since he was 14, in fact, when he saw a UFO. I mean, he really did. he saw little kids on the ground walking around and stuff. I mean, it's an amazing story, and if you buy Secrets of the UFO, you can read it in chapter one. I think he's the third person. I'm not sure. Anyway, Fern Creek, Kentucky. At any rate, he is an engineer. So he was describing the same environment, but he was describing how it worked. And so it was very interesting to hear this addition to our information about this place, because his point of view was so incredibly different than the view of a person that's immersed in literature and music and art. It's different in a very fundamental way to the reality of the situation. It lets you know what exactly is going on, how does it work, and so forth. So I think more than anything else, that's my point of view That's where that comes from. And I offer it with the understanding that everybody trash and that it was mere coincidence that four different people described the same place and the same living conditions, and even little things like how we got together to eat and what a joy that was and so forth, how people would come and go. It's all very interesting, and like I said, if you read Secrets of the UFO, and if you want more, you can read, there's a portion in the introduction to one of the Law of One, where we go over Morris's additions to what Elizabeth and Sally and I offered together in the Secrets of the UFO, Chapter 8. I have had tell you, Ruckert, this is not fun. And I am so upset with you, I could just scream. Why did you talk me into this? This is horrible. This is hard. And I have to admit, it is. But it's what we came to do. I'm glad we're here. I hope everybody wakes up. I really do. Because once you wake up, you're alone again. There are a lot of people that are in this with us. And we're all working towards the same goal, which is to infuse this planet with the love and the light of the one infinite creator. We can do it, guys. We really can. Never give up. And that's pretty much what I have to offer on the subject. There is one PS, which is hilarious. When I first started listening to tapes about UFOs in the late 60s, early 70s, the fella that hosted our group had some radio shows from one of the early channelers that bore little of sense, but it was just so much fun to listen to them. And they had all these ridiculous but wonderful ways of being the next incarnation. I think we still have them on tape, but when I'm talking about tape, I'm talking about 15 IPS tape. The big machines can, you know, run, and we have the machines to run them. Whether they still work or not, I don't know, and whether the tapes that have these programs on them still work, I don't know. But there is research to be done here. If anybody ever wants to come visit you, this place, and put this stuff onto digital and add it to our archive, that would be fine with us. So, there you have it from me.
Thanks, Carla. I wanted to mention that the books Carla mentioned, Secrets of the UFO and Introduction to Book 1 of The Law of One, you can read for free in our archive at llresearch.org. If you just go to the library link, you'll find them in there. And Wanderer's Handbook also has some pretty interesting accounts of people who have memories from other incarnations, possibly from other densities. And that can be found there as well. Anybody have anything to add to that question?
Yeah. I asked a question during the contact at one point about the frontal lobes of the brain, and Ra suggested that the fourth density was where this portion of the brain would be activated. For the third density, here now, very few activated their frontal lobes, and most researchers have only begun to assign certain qualities of human experience to the frontal lobes. Most of they feel they're dormant and they don't really know what they're about. But Ross suggested that construction, for example, in the fourth density would be done mentally. And to give you something of an idea about that, if you're familiar at all with the Heads on Easter Island, Ross suggested that this was a project where fourth density negative entities mentally constructed these heads. And some of our archaeologists recently have discovered they're not just heads, they're full statues, so the rest of the body is buried under the ground. So they're massive constructions. And supposedly then we'll be able to do things like this in the fourth density. Ra also suggested that we would become aware of each the other's thoughts, so that what we would see now as the subconscious mind that Jung talked about would become available to everybody. Every experience that anybody had ever had would be available as a resource to call upon for future growth and service and problem solving. And if you look at some of the best of what third density humans have to offer, I think that that can probably be extrapolated to something that will continue on into fourth density and be a normal feature. For example, some people have photographic memory, or even more than that, they have what's called perfect memory, so that they remember everything that's ever occurred to them. We have people in the third density who are able to see auras and read the aura. I think this would be a feature of the fourth density. Maybe to read the aura in order to be able to heal other people, so that whenever there was an imbalance, that it would be more easily detected and more easily healed by the fourth density application of, again, the frontal lobes and the ability to channel intelligent energy. The last couple of days on CNN, we've seen a story about this three-year-old girl who has a little iPad, and she taught herself how to speak Spanish just using her little iPad.
Oh, wow.
And her dad reads her a story every night when they go to bed, and the story is usually 20 to 25 pages long. And the next day, the little girl can repeat word for word the story that her dad read her the night before. So, and if you remember the movie Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman and Cruise, Rain Man was what was called an idiot savant. Idiot probably because we have a hard time talking to people who have these abilities, and they're sort of in another reality. But you could take, say, a box of toothpicks that had some removed and throw it on the ground, and he could tell you exactly how many toothpicks were there. So, you know, these abilities that we might consider supernatural or extremely unusual, I think are probably going to be quite common in the fourth density. And there are others. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of people who are able to do all kinds of things. It's just amazing what the human being can do. I mean, you look at the Olympics that are going on now and see what's possible to do physically, things that weren't really thought of 20 and 30 years ago. There seems indeed to be a new breed of human being on the planet that can do things that just haven't been possible before, and just because they are able to imagine them or dream them and then pursue them with their energies. So just a few ideas there, I think, about what will be possible in the fourth density.
It's an idea. I have written about a couple of women who garden, and their gardening is different because they can talk to the divas and the nature spirits that are with every single plant that grows and with every single type of plant that grows. And they can find out what is bothering a certain plant and fix it. You know, oh, well, this is not the right ground, or, you know, these things are upsetting me or whatever. And so frustrated by plants that get sick or plants that are reacting oddly to drought or to too much water or whatever, you're talking with the plants and saying, well, what can I do for you? And you're doing whatever the plants need, and so the plants are loving you back. I mean, this is to love relationship, and you love them, and they love you, and there's this conversation that keeps going on, and so the production of food stops being a duty and a job and hard work and becomes a joy and a delight and a way to share love with nature. And reading what these ladies have been able to do in talking with nature spirits is truly amazing. I've written about it in articles that are published by Jim. What's the IPU? It's a
International Metaphysical University.
No, it's one of the news. It has three. My articles are all a small, medium, and large, and I think that they're all saved in Carla's niche, as well as being on. It's not IPU. It's IGA. There's a news agency that has three initials. I'm not remembering at this point.
UPI.
UPI. That's it.
Got it.
UPI. Yeah, they're in UPI's archives. I haven't done them for about three and a half years because of illness, which has taken me beyond my ability to work as I had been. And it's very sad because I have so many things to say, and you know, I'm just stacked up with articles I want to write. And it's so much fun because one article will lead to another, and I write about one thing, and someone will write me about, we're doing the same thing over here, except it's different, and here's how it's different. And then I can write about that, too. It's so much fun. I miss it tremendously. But at any rate, whether you find it through UPI or whether you find it through my own Carl's niche in that part of LLresearch.org. Take a look if you're interested, and have fun imagining what might occur if people just could open up and talk with nature the way these ladies can.
About fourth density, I think, like Jim was getting at, to attempt to think about it just beggars the imagination because it's so far beyond our experience, including what abilities we have. But just on the aspect of harmony, at least in the instance of the fourth density positive, the harmony alone would be so fundamentally and radically different from our experience on Earth that it's kind of hard to conceive of what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person in that sphere desiring just the same type of desire that Carla was describing in coming to this planet, the desire to help, arising from the bones, you might say, from the center of the person. Imagine the gravity of a group of people feeling something. For instance, study war. When war, whether it's offensive or defensive war, when that event emerges within a group or a collective, that sweeps everybody into it, and it has a strong pull. I mean, imagine that gravity, that same collective power, but pointed in one direction towards service to others. And I think that's a key that leads to a key concept in understanding the higher densities is orientation is the word. Ra even says, describes a social memory complex as becoming a social memory complex, quote, when its entire group of entities are of one orientation or seeking. And elsewhere, Ra talks about the power and need for, power of and need for orientation when they're addressing our situation on planet Earth with regard to the armaments, the weapons that we all stockpile. And in Session 10, Ra says that it is our understanding that the mind and spirit complexes of those of your people need orientation rather than the, quote, toys needing dismantlement. So even more so than, more important than any sort of legislative policy that says we all need to disarm our nuclear weapons, orientation would be fundamentally more important because it would dramatically change this experience, just like a dream landscape, so to speak. You go into a dream and the landscape, the environment, the mood, the characters all manifest around the basic emotion that that dream is conveying or exploring. Likewise, I think in Fourth Density, that group, all wanting to help one another, like Austin was saying, everybody finding their place in the collective, would create an experience that goes beyond our words, which is, I believe, why Ross said, you know, they're quite limited in being able to describe it in words. And I think in terms of how everybody falls into place, it's, like Carla was saying, you're born in that higher density with a particular desire. You want to serve in a particular way, whether it's farming or working in some kind of administrative structure or being a mother, et cetera. I think there's a sort of, when I was reading Secrets of the UFO, there was talk of establishing the aptitude of particular entities and then allocating them or putting them in a certain field that matches the aptitude. And those particular entities wanting to serve in that way. They want to do anything they can to help the whole and to help other people. So that concludes my thought.
Something popped into my mind listening to Jim when he was talking about, were we aware of others' vibrations, aware of other people's thoughts? I remember one time somebody asked Kuo or another entity that Carla was channeling whether or not they appreciated the music that they would play for tuning in the channeling circle. And I remember the entity responded something along the lines of, we are aware of it and we appreciate it, but everything to us is similar to the vibration of a song. Like, we see everything as a song. So even though you recognize that song as a song, we recognize everything in our awareness as a harmony that you might recognize within a song. So I think if you can imagine your entire awareness being like you're seeing the entire universe like a song, like a harmony of vibrations, it sounds pretty cool to me. So we're getting a little low on time, so we could mention our two workshops coming up again. We got the Art of Healing Circle Retreat here in Louisville from March 21st through the 23rd. And then the Archetypes Workshop, April 11th through the 13th. If you want to know more about those, you can go to bringforth.org. And under the Bring Forth News section, you will see a link for either of those. You can follow those links and learn more about how to register, learn more about what they're about. We're really looking forward to them, and we hope that you will join us. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions, JP in Utah.
And know that we love you.
We do. We love you all. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch. Have a wonderful day. Be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will talk with you then.